Today, the property investment mirage. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, this post covering finance and property news. Today, I want to look into the investment sector of the property market because actually there are a number of inconvenient truths which people don't really want to talk about but should consider when examining, for example, returns on property versus returns on other assets, including gold, which of course has an annualized return at the moment. It's about 11% thanks to the recent peaks in gold prices. Now, to set this in context, of course, the Finn Review came out again and said first home buyers are urgently fueling the auction action. And the recent numbers do indeed show slightly more homes went under the hammer over the last weekend. But actually, if you look carefully, there is considerable contention between first-time buyers and property investors, and property investors are still piling in the market, well, pretty strongly, actually. And if you look carefully, all of the data suggests that property investors are still up for property almost at, well, any price. Indeed, the latest private credit data to August 2025 shows that, in fact, the growth in private sector credit was strongest in the investment sector. It rose 0.7% over the last month, compared to 0.5% for owner-occupier growth. And in fact, that's a trend that has been in place for some long time now. Now, property investors, of course, are partly driven by price growth expectations. And the latest data does show indeed that prices are on the turn up. And you can see there both the longer term trends and the 3-month annualized. And yes, there is a move up. But as I've said previously, it isn't uniformly spread across the country, nor across property types, nor indeed is it necessarily true that all properties are increasing in value. I can still point to a number of places where prices are still lower now than they were back in 2017. North Ryde, as an example. Now, the other observation, of course, is at the moment, because of this stronger demand, particularly now from investors and first-time buyers, and also the fact that new listings are not really rising very strongly, there is no surprise, perhaps, that we expect to see prices rising higher ahead. So the question really to consider today is, does that mean that this is a good time for property investors to consider buying into the property market? Remember, prices relative to incomes are extreme at the moment, and many would say that prices are actually maybe 40% over their long-term value. And of course, other asset classes are available, including gold and silver and crypto and bonds and stocks, well, all of whom are in bubble territory. So is property investment a good bet or not? Now, here I want to refer to an article that was published in July 2024 by James Gruber, writing on Morningstar. And he went into some very interesting points here, which actually I think are worth considering. He started by saying that, well, the Australian real estate market doesn't need any more promotion. It gets enough from the quacks and lobbyists that fill the daily newspaper columns and broadcast airwaves. Absolutely right. But actually, he does point out, and he's right, there is really much less discussion about true property values or valuations. It's a curious omission. Particularly, of course, bearing in mind that the discussion around stocks, bonds, and other assets will be based on the price-to-earnings ratios for stocks, for example, or the yields on bonds. And he went on to say that for residential property, why not so much? Well, perhaps because valuations on housing don't matter, or maybe they don't fit the uniformly bullish commentary on the sector. Well, that's probably a good part of the story. And he goes on to say, well, maybe house prices are ludicrously overvalued, maybe up to 40% overpriced. And he goes on to say, of course, and this is an important point, valuations for residential properties are more driven by recent property transactions than anything else. There's almost no fundamental connection to the underlying value of the land or the cost of construction. Which, of course, then begs the question, well, in a bubble, what is a property worth? Well, it's what somebody would be prepared to pay for it, I guess, but that doesn't necessarily help with long-term investment planning. And he goes on to say that he has friends and acquaintances who purchased investment properties well before they bought their own house. Some own two investment properties and don't own their own home and have recently moved back into the parents' place, and several others with average pay jobs who own multiple investment homes. All of them are loaded to the gills with debt, which of course keeps the banks happy. And the fact that investors are willing to buy houses that are almost guaranteed to lose the money on a cash basis is very significant. And the average capital return tends to be lower than the rate of interest that you get on a mortgage. Okay, rates are a little lower than they were when he wrote this article. So he did a quick calculation, and his estimate, best estimate, was that maybe the nominal return for housing is under 5% all up. Well, that may or may not be true. The truth is, of course, it's quite difficult to calculate the true return because you've got two elements. You've got the cash flow element, because if you're actually an investor, then you're paying probably a mortgage. You've got probably some offset on tax breaks, and you've got some revenue streams coming in from the rental that you're receiving. And then you've got to pay maintenance on the property and other costs, management fees, possibly all of those things. So it is quite complicated to try and understand what the true returns on investment properties actually are. And of course, the industry tends to quote the gross investment yield, which is the relationship between the theoretical asking price of that property at the moment, or the purchase price if you're going to buy it, and the theoretical rent that you might get if you actually were to let it full time, fully occupied for a full year. In practice, of course, some properties don't get let that easily, and sometimes people have vacancies as well. So there's a really important question here, which is, well, so what is the true real returns on property investment over a period of time? It's quite complicated. Many property investors that I deal with have no idea, have never done the math, and they've got this intrinsic belief that property investment is the best thing to invest in because, one, you can see the property, and two, property, of course, always goes up. Well, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Again, I can point to areas in the country where prices are still falling. So be careful where you buy and what you buy. Now, there's another interesting little factor here, and this again is a bit of an old article, but it is worth just thinking about this. A quarter of Australia's property investments are held by 1% of taxpayers, according to recent data from the ATO. And this concentration of home ownership suggests that it's easier to increase investment portfolios than entering the housing market, particularly for first-time buyers. I think that's absolutely right. So how do we try and parse apart what's really going on with property investment? It's not easy. And of course, people will flick to news like this. Unit rents in Sydney hit a record high of $750 a week. Or this headline, regional New South Wales towns have rents rising the most over the last year. Cotality, of course, recently reported in their quarterly rental review that the growth rates for rentals were up. The annual pace of national rental growth gained some momentum in the third quarter, with rents rising 4.3% over the year to September, up from a low of 3.4% seen over the 12 months to May. And you can see here that different centres have different growth rates, with Darwin at the top and Adelaide close to the bottom. But they also made the point, and this is worth considering, that the gross rental yields over time are going sideways or down. with dwelling values, they wrote, up 4.4% and rental values up 2.8% since the first rate cut in February, national gross rental yields have eased 4 basis points to their lowest level since November last year. Since February, gross rental yields have fallen across Darwin at 6.47%, Perth 4.16%, Adelaide 3.58%, Brisbane 3.55%, Canberra 4.01%, and Sydney at 3%. They held steady in Melbourne at 3.66% and expanded in Hobart at 4.4%. Now, I discussed some of these trends the other day in my live show about how real households are coping with the property pickle despite the hype. And of course, I went through some of the stress data and looked specifically at both rental stress and the mortgage stress for households. But I didn't really go into the investor sector very far because I didn't have time and there were lots of other things I wanted to cover. So what I thought I'd do today now is to take that investment discussion a little further and go granular based on my data and have a look at what is happening in practice with regards to gross and net rental yields. We're going to start with the rental stress and investor stress data. And you can see here that investor stress, highlighted in yellow, went up in September in the ACT, the Northern Territories, South Australia, Victoria and Western Australia. And about 17.5% of property investors at the moment are experiencing stress on their investment properties. That's more than 500,000 property investors. And that's a significant number. And that means that those people are underwater and are considering possibly trying to sell their property. Now, of course, there are other people trying to buy, so no surprise that we've got both properties on the market from ex-investors and new property investors from people who want to buy them. And they're competing with first-time buyers. Oh, and by the way, if you look at it on a segmented basis, the highest level of investor stress is actually among the more affluent households, which chimes with that Guardian article. And 28.7% of the exclusive professionals, the most wealthy households, and 27.1% of the young affluents, again, wealthy households, have the highest levels of investor stress because, of course, they have the greatest proportion of properties and multiple investment properties are often held in their portfolios. We also have data looking at the number or the count of stressed investors in a particular postcode. And you can see here that at the moment, postcode 2065, Narrenburn in New South Wales, has the highest count of stressed investors with about 3,100 there, or 43% of property investors in that area. Then we have postcode 3977, Cranbourne in Victoria, with 2,879. And then Mandurah in Western Australia, postcode 6210. And then Toowoomba in Queensland at 4350. Blacktown in New South Wales, postcode 2148. Cooma in Queensland, postcode 4209. Benowa in Queensland at 4217. Beaumont Hills in New South Wales, postcode 2155. Bundaberg in Queensland, postcode 4670. Sampson in Western Australia, postcode 6163. Epping in New South Wales, postcode 2121. And Westmeath in New South Wales, postcode 2145. Hornsby in New South Wales, 2077. And Yatala in Queensland, postcode 4207. And even there in Yatala, there are more than 1,800 households, or 22% of property investors there, who are actually struggling with their investment property with negative cash flow. Now, of course, the other question is the capital appreciation. And yes, you might actually say, well, I don't mind if I'm in negative cash flow, provided I get capital appreciation. And of course, there are capital breaks for capital appreciation for property, which also encourages people to hold property. But it does also beg the question, well, what is the most likelihood ahead? Will properties continue to go higher or not? That depends on scenarios. And I run three: the Goldilocks zone, where we get rate cuts later in the year, migration remains above average, and we don't get a recession. So all things are good and property prices could rise. But there are other scenarios. We have a softer landing. We see rates higher for longer. We have inflation rising again later. And we see a bit of a fall in migration. And the worst case nightmare scenario is where rates stay high, but then we see inflation stepping up, but unemployment rises, wages growth stalls, and then we get some significant factors which ultimately creates a recession in Australia. And in those three scenarios, on average, prices will move very differently. In the best case scenario, we could see significant rises up 14% over 3 years, but the base case is more sideways rather than up. And the worst case are some significant falls, maybe even down 20% over 3 years. And units would follow on from the data there for houses. So there are different outcomes based on those different scenarios. If you think property prices are going to continue to rise, then you still might pile into property because, well, it's tangible and you can see it, etc., etc. But on the other hand, if property prices don't rise and you've got net investment yield negative, then, well, actually, your investment is going backwards and you're losing money relative to other investments that you could be making, opportunity costs and all that. Now, just to complete the conversation here, we can delve into the data in a bit more detail too. And this is our gross investment mapping, which shows the different level of gross investment on average for investment properties in each of the main postcodes across the country. That's part of the modelling we do. And we start here in the centre of Sydney, and you can see that we're in the 3 to 4% range for most properties in and around the centre of the city. As we pull out, things don't look too bad. There's a little bit of a lower returns in places like Vaucluse, North Bondi and Gladesville. And as we pull out, we can see that, again, those returns are a little lower. But nevertheless, all up in the Sydney Basin, on average, the gross returns are okay. Not massive, but okay. And so people might say, well, I can see, therefore, returns in the 3 to 4% range. Remember, that's gross investment yields. So that's the theoretical difference between the asking price or the selling price of the property and the fully let rental stream coming in, which is theoretical and probably not that useful when it comes to making good decisions. But if we go to other centres, for example, if we go to Melbourne, what do we see there? Well, there, yeah, things are not so hot. Actually, you can see there that, again, as we pull out, we're in the 3 to 3.3%. And then we start seeing some of the lower returns, 2.5 to 3%, in places like Wyndham, for example, postcode 3026, or Flemington, 3031. And again, as you pull out, you can see that there are just a few places where we're getting 2.5% or below, particularly up to the north there, postcode 3061, postcode 3428, and postcode 3097. And even some regional areas, postcode 3341, for example, are actually pretty low as well. And so some of the hotspots, like, for example, Hume, is an interesting observation. So even the gross investment yields are not particularly flash in those areas. But it's worth highlighting, there is no area in the greater Melbourne area where we're seeing returns in the 4.5 or above range. If we compare that with Brisbane, you can see that in and around Brisbane, returns are stronger. So in the centre of Brisbane, we are seeing quite regularly 4.5 to 5.1. And those returns are sustained as we pull out, not uniformly. You know, there are a few areas where we're in the mid threes. Chapel Hill, for example, 4069. But elsewhere, we can see that returns are somewhat stronger. And that's been a pretty consistent story as we pull out further, even into places like Ipswich and the Gold Coast. and this is generally true, gross investment yields are somewhat stronger in the Queensland area compared with, for example, Sydney or Melbourne. If we jump across to Perth, we can see even stronger returns in and around the centre of Perth, with postcodes like 6050 and 6007, and West Perth, for example, and South Perth, all above 5% or 5.1%. And as we pull out again, we can see areas like in postcode 6010, where returns are above 4.5%. There are other areas where returns are a little lower, but generally, returns in the West, from a gross investment perspective, are better, considerably better than those in Melbourne, which is perhaps one of the reasons why in Melbourne, people are more likely to sell and more likely to buy in Perth or Queensland. And looking at South Australia, again, returns are pretty good, above 4.5% in the centre of Adelaide and in areas around that, and just slightly lower further out. But then if you look carefully, you can see postcode 5072, for example, where gross investment yields are considerably down. So there is not a uniform pattern in Adelaide, but nevertheless, compared with other parts of the country, they're still at the upper end. So now, having looked at gross investment yield, let's look at net investment yield. This is where the rubber hits the road, because net investment yield is, on one hand, looking at the rental, the actual rentals coming in, which takes account of vacancy rates and those sorts of things, and also the total costs, including the mortgage, insurance, if appropriate, management fees, maintenance, strata fees, all the other issues relating to the maintenance of the property. And when you look at net investment yield, you get a very different story. Let's start in the centre of Sydney. So here in red, we've got a net investment yield negative 1.6 or below, grading down. And you can see there that the truth is in and around the centre of Sydney, there are areas where people are considerably underwater in net investment yield terms. As we pull out, actually, the consistency continues. Not quite so bad in the area of North Sydney, for example, or Gladesville. But as we pull out, you can see over in the West, Strathfield and places like that, well, things are looking pretty bad. And I'd highlight the fact that Vaucluse is an example of an area where net investment yields are negative, or the Northern Beaches. And if we pull out further, it's pretty consistent. So in and around the Sydney region, there are many property investors on average in the postcode losing from a net investment yield point of view. If we go to Melbourne, we can find a somewhat similar story. It's not too bad close in, but if you pull out, you can see surrounding the centre of Melbourne, there are a lot of areas where the net investment yields are considerably underwater. And if you go out, you can see that there are almost no areas. There are one or two, like 3114, which is above 0.9% and above. But that is the exception rather than the rule. And in fact, well, it's a sea of red, really, in the Greater Melbourne region. This is why property investors have been quitting Melbourne in droves in recent times. Now, if we look at Brisbane, a bit of a different story. We are in positive territory in the centre of Brisbane, postcode 4000. And there are a few areas like Windsor, 4030 to the north, or postcode 4103 to the south, Fairfield, which is underwater. Camp Hill, another example, and postcode 40602. And if we pull out further to postcode 4306 and 4305, you can see that, well, 4306 is very negative, 4305 is slightly negative. Now, there are areas like postcode 4156, which is considerably positive, 0.9% and above. But actually, if you look carefully, then most of the investment returns are just above zero from a net investment perspective, which puts a different perspective on investing in Queensland. Jumping across to Perth, and we find, well, a somewhat similar story. There are areas like postcode 6007, West Leederville, that's doing very well, 0.9% and above. But there are other areas like North Perth, for example, where the returns were quite strong, but net investment yields still negative. And postcode 6052 would follow on. And you can see that there are some others that are actually considerably underwater. So even in the hot Western Australian property market, some property investors are underwater from a cash flow perspective. Now, of course, if you believe that capital appreciation is going to save you, then go for your life. But this is a bit of a truth tell for a lot of people who perhaps haven't done the work to understand what the true returns on their property is. And by the way, if you go to the north, well, we know that there is a lot of financial stress up there, including stressed investors and stressed renters and stressed mortgage holders. Maybe it's not surprising that we find that net investment yields are strongly negative. And if we go across to Adelaide, well, guess what? Even in the centre of Adelaide, where there are some areas where there are returns above zero, there are quite a few areas in and around the centre of Adelaide where, from a net investment yield perspective, like Keswick 5035, for example, that are underwater. And even places like West Croydon 5008 or Port Adelaide Enfield is a little bit negative too. And if you look at postcode 5073, well, that's in the most deep negative tones as well. So even here in South Australia, where people have been buying in big, a lot of people are underwater. Now, there are a few areas, postcode 5020 and 5093, that has significant positive returns. But it's certainly not uniform, and it shows you just how much of a patchwork this whole question is. Now, the point of today's conversation is just to highlight that property investment in the current environment is a bit complicated, and not everybody who's buying into property investments are likely to make good returns. It's an opportunity cost, of course, and there's been a lot of research that highlights that when property prices ease, it's investors who quit first. Happened in Iceland, for example, and in the UK in the last property downturn. So the question is, if prices don't continue to rise in Australia, and of course the government is doing everything they can to try and support property price growth at the moment, but if they don't continue to rise, does that mean property investors are going to actually exit more quickly? And as I say, I know of a number of property investors who are desperate to sell at the moment because they can't make it work. The maths just aren't there. Now, this brings us back to the headline for this particular show, the property investment mirage. It is a lot more complicated than you may think when it comes to property investing. You need to buy the right property in the right place at the right price, and also do your homework if you're not to lose money over the medium term. And again, let me stress, this is about opportunity cost. Where else could I invest, and what could I get by way of returns? And of course, there are other classes that are doing quite well at the moment. So my takeout from today is simply this. Many property investors are actually losing their shirt at the moment. They may not realize it. They don't necessarily do the maths. But actually, it's only a minority of people who are actually making good returns on those property investments. In fact, the net returns are a lot lower than other asset classes at the moment. So if you are a property investor for the first time considering getting the market, make sure you do the math, make sure you do your calculations to ensure that you're actually going to be able to make some returns. And of course, yeah, there are tax breaks, but the tax breaks won't be necessarily sufficient to cover the damage. Now, if you're interested in more granular information about the way we do this and our modelling, we actually have data on more than 2,000 postcodes, of course, across the country. And the 2,000 postcodes include the gross and net investment yield and also the expectations in terms of where prices may move, which allows you to understand where, in fact, the hotspots for investment purposes might actually be. If you're interested in getting that data, you can join our Patreon program and you can subscribe to get the data for $50 plus GST a month. And you can hold that subscription for as long or as little as you want to be able to get your hands on the data. The data allows you to slice and dice and look at different parts of the country and compare gross and net investment returns. And that data is updated each month. And of course, the returns do move around simply because interest rates change and the property valuations also change and the rentals change as well. So this is a very granular piece of analysis, but it is quite helpful in trying to understand where the hot spots are and also where the negative spots are. But the bottom line is this: if you are a property investor, beware of the property investment mirage. It's everywhere, and don't believe the spruiking. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultant standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.